Hey teachers, if you're tired of not knowing how to create your lessons that reach EL newcomers in your classroom in a way that your content is actually accessible to them, and you no longer want to be limited by the constant push to move your ELs forward without concrete understanding behind why simple accommodations in your already existing lessons make all the difference for the newcomers, I have something exciting to share with you. I have compiled every masterclass I have ever recorded on how to teach and reach English learners in a regular education classroom. I am talking strategies, how-tos, and ready-made resources, and have created a digital masterclass library called Light the Way to EL Teaching Success, where you can get instant access to 10 practical and actionable videos, 8 done-for-you lessons, and 1 professional development certificate for 3 hours of your time. If you are looking for practical PD that you can do on your own time and gain all the knowledge you need about teaching English learners from the comfort of your home, Light the Way to EL Teaching Success Digital Masterclass Library is for you. To learn more and to join, click the link in the show notes, and I cannot wait to see you inside. You're listening to episode 101 of the ESL Teaching Podcast. How many times have you heard this phrase, math is math, it is a universal language? Well, let me tell you, it is not. And that is exactly what my today's guest, Odalis Amparo from Illustrative Mathematics, and I talk about. Odalis is a skilled educator who is highly committed to elevating the voice and supporting the achievement of students and teachers in historically marginalized communities. She's fiercely passionate about the intersection between language learning, mathematics instruction, and culturally sustaining pedagogy. Odalis is currently a professional learning specialist at Illustrative Mathematics, but has experience as an elementary classroom teacher and mathematics coach in a variety of settings. Odalis and I have a powerful conversation about why teaching math language is a must. We dissect the notion that every student can, in fact, be a math person, the cultural frameworks that students and teachers bring into a math classroom, how to make math joyful, and so much more. I personally could talk to her for hours, but we had a little bit of time and we managed to get so many meaningful and important ideas in just the short time that we had. I know you will find this conversation both very helpful and moving at the same time. So without further ado, let's get right to the episode. Hello and welcome to the ESL Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Yeva Grosslis, otherwise known as simply Yeva, and I am so thankful that you tuned in. I'm looking forward to sharing both my knowledge and experience on this podcast, as well as that of my fellow teachers. Hello, Odalis, and welcome to the ESL Teaching Podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited. As we were talking before I hit record, I looked at all of the responses to the questions, and I know my listeners are going to be stoked to hear all of this information. I really am passionate about helping classroom teachers in all subjects who have English learners to access the richness that those students bring to the classroom and to expand the minds to see how they can teach them. So this episode is very timely, and let's just start with the questions right away.
Yeah, sounds good.
So tell us a little bit about your backstory, who you are, what you do, and what role does ELL play in your life?
Yeah, so I'm a first generation Dominican American. I've grown up here, but my parents came here when they were, I want to say, in their late teens. So they hadn't even finished high school. And so I grew up with the privilege of knowing Spanish and not yet knowing English. And so it was a really cool way to start school, knowing that I had a firm foundation in one language, but definitely needed, obviously, support as a language learner to acquire the second language. But I think for me, part of why I do what I do is definitely really connected to who I was when I was younger, right? So I take it very personally because I was a former ELL, right? I have always been able, yeah, so I've definitely always been able to kind of relate to my students. And as a teacher, having worked in a setting that worked with many students learning English, it was also interesting to have that perspective, right, as a teacher. And so I just took it, I take it still personally, all the way across. I worked as a teacher in a variety of elementary grades, and I definitely loved my role as a fourth grade teacher. I worked in a dual language program, which was unique because although it wasn't all students trying to learn English as a second language, it was students were learning language, right? Some were learning English and some were learning Spanish. And I think that for me, being able to work with students who kind of like resembled who I was when I was in elementary school, being able to have an opportunity that I did not have, right, because of the political climate at that time when I was in elementary school, was really powerful, I think, and it really kind of pivoted a lot of why I decided to kind of really dig into the math, really dig into a lot of the other things that came after in my journey. But definitely, I feel like I'm right where I'm supposed to be because I definitely think it's important, and not everyone needs to have that foundation of having experienced it, but it's really important to have people in the field who have some sort of personal connection because it makes the work that much more personal and authentic.
Oh, absolutely. I can relate to so much that you said here. And even though I come from another country, so I my experience in the American school system was as an exchange student from Lithuania.
Oh, wow.
And I knew English.
Yeah.
I came here, but I couldn't understand
Yeah.
anything. And for me, in Lithuania, math was one of the worst subjects, and we can probably dive into it a little bit more. But when I came here, it seemed too simple. So
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
it was just like a complete mismatch. But I think the fact that you said it's not necessary to be a bilingual or trilingual or however, like an or from a different culture, right? To be a teacher of English learners, but the taking it personally, I feel like is what is the vehicle almost for what we do, because so much of our work is advocating, and you can't advocate from a lukewarm place.
Agreed. That resonates. Yeah,
Yeah,
definitely.
absolutely. So let's talk about math and the language of the subject. So we often hear that math is math, it's not a language. What are your thoughts about it?
Oof, this is my, I could live here in this space. This might be my
Live
topic to
here.
talk about. Yeah, the misconception that math is a universal language is super prevalent today. And I think it does act as a barrier for supporting multilingual students the way that they deserve to be supported, because I think it limits the richness of the discipline. So we limit it to just it being symbols and digits. Right, just kind of weaves together when we think about math being a universal language, because it has that understanding of, well, everyone knows it because everyone knows what the symbols represent for XYZ. But there's so much more to it. And I think that teaching mathematics should be approached as one would when teaching a new language. So keeping in mind that all students in the space need to be supported in one way or another, regardless, right, if they're monolingual students or they're multilingual. But to really enjoy and understand and actively use the math, we need to think about it from all the layers that make it up. And translanguaging for sure has been something that I've been very passionate about lately. And I'm curious to hear if that's something that is something that you are familiar with or you work with and or you use in your setting.
So I am familiar with translanguaging, and to me, when I it's funny when you learn something that has a term, but you've been doing it all along. You know, it's like, oh,
The best.
this is
Oh, they have a
exactly
name for
right.
it. Yeah. That resonates.
We're learning concepts in school,
Yeah.
right? So there are certain concepts that the kids come with, right? And if we can help them access those concepts using whatever tools they have and whatever tools we can provide them, I think why not? You know, why
Yes.
not be open? And even,
Exactly.
you know, again, for someone who was math was always like a shaky subject for me, you know. So
Yeah.
like even as someone kind of like seeing that you can arrive at certain problem solutions, in different ways, right? So why not present the information in a way that the kids can understand? Talk a little bit more about translanguaging.
Yeah, no, I think I've always seen it as a toolkit, right? So like every child that walks through your door has a toolkit. They know something that they're bringing into the space. And when we think about translanguaging, we're essentially having students have the ability to, not the ability because they're able to, but giving them the space to kind of dip into that linguistic toolkit. So they get to use whatever they've got to navigate through whatever you're presenting them with. So if I, for example, am a fourth grader and I'm going in and I don't know the word fraction, but I know the word fracción, you're letting me use that. You're letting me, in conversation with my partner, if I'm doing a turn-in talk, kind of piece my way together through the conversation using whatever I know in whatever language, without prioritizing one over the other. And that way, it kind of evens the playing field, meaning that our language learners, our English language learners, can go in and bring in what they've got, regardless of what language it's in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, you reminded me of something that happens in my classroom every day because sometimes they look at the word in any subjects because I help them with all content areas. And I mean, naturally, for me, naturally, we focus on the very, very wordy social studies and extremely lots of reading and all that. But I do sometimes from time to time have to help them in math word problems, right? But it's very interesting to see how they. I have a couple of speakers of Turkish. They explain to each other, right? So there's like a little bit of Turkish in my classroom, and then there's a little bit of French over here, and a little bit, and somebody's in Portuguese. So it's like it's not one language, but they all bring that background. And if somebody doesn't know something, I can immediately hear a person who knows immediately explain it. It's like tossing a ball, and then oh, okay, pass back at you.
It's like catch and release for sure. And it makes me think about like what your question at the beginning too. Because yes, it's not a universal language, but it is a language, and there is a commonality and shared experience around quantities and numerical symbols and digits and numbers. And so when I really think about math, it's everywhere, right? So it's all around us. And yes, that is what makes it universal. But the content itself is really what needs a more structured approach to ensure that everyone has equal access to it.
Absolutely. Just thinking about it, I had a student a long time ago. It was a student who was supposed to take a t state test in math. So the first year, you're not supposed, you cannot take ELA, whatever, whatever. Math is a universal language. You can take it, regardless of the fact that it's full of word problems. But I don't, this mismatch still boggles my mind. I don't understand people who are making the tests and still saying. But the student came from a country where nobody plays baseball. Baseball is not a thing. And they get a problem, a math problem with a diamond and all of the innings and all of those. I still don't know baseball, okay? But it's like, but it's like, think about a word diamond. What is a diamond? What is the first thing that comes into your mind? So it's all like you said, very strategic approach, as you're teaching the language, the column, the table, the diamond, and all of those things.
No, yeah, I think it makes me think of when I was younger, and I feel like probably for many people here, a lot of the word problems were about apple orchards and apples, right? So you go and you have 10 apples, and then you take three down, and then how many do you have? Or in fractions in upper elementary, you use a lot of baking. And I laugh because I have never baked anything with my mom my entire life. And my mom is a cook and a really good cook at that, right? Like cooking and food was a huge part of my upbringing and still is, my life. But those types of problems and contexts didn't do anything for me. You might as well have just had the 1/4 plus 1/6 plus 1/4 on the page. And I think how, it's interesting to think how many of our students are feeling this way. How many students haven't, baked something or gone to an apple orchard or gone to a baseball game? And what are we doing? Are we providing barriers, right, when we're doing that? Or are we really helping them with giving them the context that they need? So it's very interesting, kind of like the dichotomy of it all.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I had it's not even just a little bit more on this topic. It's not even just like the cultural, like apple picking, right? Knowing the internal system of any organization, the internal workings. One of my favorite, I actually took a screenshot and I use it in my professional development. I had a student from China a couple of years ago, and we had, and she was so hungry for learning. I can't even tell you. I still remember
Oh,
her.
yeah.
And she wanted, she was good, she was gonna get there no matter what. And you know what? I'm gonna have to be on my toes to make sure she does.
Yeah.
A page long word, not a page, but like let's exaggerate a little bit. A page long word problem talking about trays in the cafeteria and the pizza line
Yeah.
and the logo and also the knowledge that the student had to pick up and to know. She didn't go to cafeteria because it was COVID. Okay.
Wow,
It
so
was
she didn't have
COVID.
access to that.
Nobody
Yeah.
went to any cafeteria. There was no
Yeah.
line. If you went, oh, I don't know. So it was just, I think to this day, it's like, wow, can we just think about what people can use and just kind of like back off a little bit and
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
maybe not provide like, provide a context that the kids can relate to.
Exactly.
So you emphasize that every student is a math person. So can you elaborate
Yes.
on that?
I love this because I feel like this is a controversial statement for so many people, but I feel like I can say this and feel this and believe this for many reasons. But for one, I struggled with math growing up. So I myself did not have the mindset that I was a math person up until college, probably, right? Like I needed tutoring and a lot of support, and I did well in many other areas academically, but for some odd reason, I couldn't access the math the way that it was being presented. And so now, as an adult, I believe that every person is a math person, every student, every child. I definitely think that if we look at it from the perspective of children coming in and having something to contribute, and that they're contributing is of value. And I think where I work, illustrative mathematics definitely is anchored in that belief that all students are capable of learning grade level mathematics. And that was something that really attracted me to the curriculum. And I was exposed to it at first when I was coaching in my home district. And I loved the curriculum for that reason because it supported that shift that I was still kind of like working through, I think, from college into my early years of teaching, right? Because it's like, well, I'm teaching math, but I don't necessarily understand that because when I was in fourth grade, I really struggled and I didn't get it. And now, somehow, 20 years later, I'm responsible for teaching the content I didn't get. But I think it's all about viewing it from that perspective of we're all co-creating something, and we're all coming into it with something, and they're definitely is going to be an entry point for every child, regardless of what they know or do not know yet. So yeah, I think when it comes to math, it's just about making sure that students know that they're math people. Like it's all about mindset. It's not a
Oh, it is
thing, right?
absolutely. I like
Yeah.
how you say that, how we present math and how we frame it. So I come from a very strict secondary education, very strict and very like rigid. It was post-Soviet Lithuania. So it was
Wow.
like this. There's no choice.
Yep.
You go to school, this is what you take. There's no elective, alternate
Wow.
changing of schedules, nothing. Math is math, done. Okay. So you go and I, from me personally, there was a glimmer of hope that my gosh, maybe I'll get it. And then it went to the next, and then it went to the next, and then it went
Yeah.
to the next. So when I
Yeah,
came
the
here and I
rigor of it
see all
all.
these like different levels of math, and I'm like, my gosh, if I probably could have been fine with some lower level math and succeeded in it if people presented information in the way that I can understand, you know? So
Exactly.
I think when it comes to English learners, you know, they have you have to kind of like look at what is
Yes.
and deal with that. So
Exactly.
which brings us to the question, how can we make math more joyful, especially for English learners?
Ooh, yeah, that's another really good one. I think students, especially multilingual learners learning English, can find joy when they're invited into the space wholly. So I think if I am entering a classroom and I know that the educator, the teacher, the adult who's facilitating my learning is inviting me into the space fully, but it goes back to that translanguaging piece. Like if I already know that the culture of my classroom is everything I say has value. Everything that I have to contribute, regardless of the language I can contribute it in, isn't invited, right? Like they want me to share that. I think that drastically changes the rigidity of math because now you're not trying to conform to what the teacher's expectation, quote unquote, is of what it's supposed to be. You can just be. I feel like there's a freeness and fluidity in that freeness. And I think that's what we need more of in math. And I think that is connected directly to the joy that can be felt.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. If you are validated in any situation, and especially in math, and I know we also can talk about, sometimes maybe girls are like, I remember myself as a girl, like going into that space of trying to conform and be in a certain like social role where maybe, I don't know, there's math people and there's no math people. And for me, it was like the not math people, you know?
Yeah,
And
that resonates.
for others, it's like it's very like self-assuring. I've heard
Yeah.
students say math is my thing because 2 + 2 is 4, and there's no
The
analysis of
concreteness of
that. Yeah, there's no
it.
analysis whose fault it is.
Yeah, it's just concrete. And we like that, right? We like that solid ground. And I think there's joy in that. And that's like one of the facets of the joy in math. But
Oh.
there's so much, so much else. And when I think about our English learners, one of the things that comes to mind is the math language routines. And I don't know if it's something that people who will be listening are familiar with, but if you're not, definitely look into them. I know that illustrative mathematics embeds them right into the curriculum, but they basically are a set of eight routines that truly enhance access for multilingual learners. And so you could do them because they're going to be good for all your kids, but they're going to be that much more helpful for your students who are acquiring English.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So, what are some ways we can relate math to our students' cultural frameworks?
I think you said something earlier that connects to this question too, that makes me think of
About the diamond.
yeah, the diamond, right? Like it's, I think that honestly, to begin with, it's really unpacking like what is culture. And I have found in my journey as an educator that like sometimes adults in the space all have different definitions of what culture is. And that's the starting point. So really trying to step out of that kind of surface level, like culture is race, culture is ethnicity, culture, and then the second level being like culture is food and music. Culture is so much more, right? Like by definition, it's inclusive of so many things. And so I think definitely starting off with a shared understanding of what is culture, and then taking it a step further and really trying to internalize what is culture to the students in front of me, right? And that changes. It doesn't matter if you've been teaching 25 years in the same district in the same city, right? You could be in an urban setting, and what was relevant in 1990 is going to be very different than 2010. And so it could be all Latinos, it could be all kids from a certain background, and culture will change. And I think it's really important to view it from that perspective.
I did want to bring up something that would be probably can go on a different tangent, but thinking about culture would be someone who, for example, students who arrive in the United States from another country, right? So let's say Dominican Republic or Haiti or Turkey, whatever, right? And students who were born here in a Dominican family, right? In a Haitian family, in a Turkish family, and culture is the same but different also, because the kids, I'm looking at my own kids, right? So I come from a culture and I feel like I know it, like I know it in my bones. I need to explain because this is how we do things, okay? And it's refreshing to be with people from the same culture because you don't have to explain. Whereas my kids, they're like, yes, they're Lithuanian, but they're more American. Yes, they want to speak the language, but it's easier for them to do this. That is in different context. And then when you go to school, and especially like if it's a very strong culture, like like Latino cultures are very, very strong family oriented, right? And you probably speak to that so much more than I could. So, or like there are Indian families that are very, very tight knit with all the culture and everything. So there's so many layers. And we talk about, like talking about food almost does it like disservice,
Yeah,
So.
definitely. No, that all resonates too, because being a first generation, it's you have one foot here and one foot there. So even it's a very interesting, like the layers of it, the way that you worded it. And I think part of like connecting it back to math or relating math to the students' cultural frameworks makes me think about kind of like zooming out, right? So if you want to take it a step further beyond the food, music, the names that you're using in your word problems, like right, the things that are very surface level, which are still good, but just, you know, there's more to it. I think thinking about leveraging things that are happening in the community, right? Connecting to real world issues and happenings. And that can be connected to math in countless ways, right? Like you're doing graphing, you could graph about a lot of things. You could compare data about a lot of things in connection to, right, real world issues. Adapting context that we share with students, like we talked about earlier, to mirror them in their experiences, which I think speaks to having as a professional, like your practice has to change and you have to be flexible, right? You shouldn't be teaching the same lesson, even if it's the same about the same content every year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, you know, to see how, because I work with a lot of content teachers and I see how they have the same thing, but they present it a little bit differently, slightly differently. But and also when I get my students, obviously I have to adapt it almost like to each one individually. So yeah, which brings us to the content and learners, right? So math connects the content and connects the learners. Talk a little bit about how illustrative mathematics, you know, does that? What does like a classroom look like?
So the IM classroom, in an ideal world, right, is a space where students can enter and they're encouraged to participate. They are confident, their math identity is built up, they're encouraged to collaborate, and the space equips them to know to use and enjoy mathematics equally, right? So there isn't a hierarchy, right? Where like you need to know it and then you need to be able to use it, and I guess you need to enjoy it. There, I think IM is very big on making sure that there's equity amongst the know, use, and enjoy. And when I think about that connection between content and the learners, that's what it is, right? I think with math, it's so easy to zoom into like the rigidity of the content itself, where really it has a lot to do with what the learners feel like in the space. Because I think if I feel invited, if I feel like I have a positive math identity, if I feel like my teacher is encouraging me to participate and they are giving me opportunities to collaborate, that in itself is empowering me to kind of really immerse myself in the content without even dipping into the actual content itself, right? So I think
Absolutely.
it's a lot about that mindset once again.
Yeah. Mindset is everything.
Yeah, it really is.
So, what do you love the most about your current role?
That's a hard question. I thought about this a lot because honestly, there's so many things. But for me, truly, I think my colleagues, the people I work with, I have worked in different settings, but I think there's a level of intentionality that is behind every decision, both big and small. And at this point, I feel like I've interacted with people within my department, but also people across the company. And there is just this level of meaningful decision making. And I think that in my role in particular, right, because I'm a professional learning specialist, so I'm working behind the scenes. So essentially, what I do is I work on a team. I'm on the kinder to fifth grade team, and we are writing and revising professional learning sessions and modules for teachers who will be adopting IM. And so I'm really behind the scenes, right? Like I'm behind the scenes. And I think that for me, what I love most is having a direct impact, even though at first glance it doesn't seem that I do, right? And it took me a while, I think, having transitioned from being in a district, working directly with students and teachers to feel this level of impact. But knowing that what I write on a slide is going to be seen by countless teachers who are then going to roll this out in a classroom. And just to think about how many students will be impacted by the way I word something, right? Like, and so I think that level of intentionality for sure is probably my favorite. It's double-edged sword because I think it's really challenging, but it's also my favorite part.
I totally agree with you, and it really resonates. I like how you put it. You know, like you work in a district, so you impact only so many teachers, but then you really countless teachers. You know, it's not like one, two, three, four, five, right? You're writing it and you're making a change. And to me, that is like that speaks to me, because for me, I want to reach teachers and make sure that they know, and educate them, and that what I know, and to show the passion for teaching English learners, right? So you kind of already answered my next question. What is challenging to
Adding to that, I think for sure one of the hardest parts of my current role is that I am writing and revising professional learning, but I'm not facilitating it. And that's hard, right? Because it's like you really need to have economy of language. You need to be really precise and concise. You need to be explicit in both the slide, which is what participants are seeing, and also facilitator notes, which is what facilitators are using to kind of guide the learning. So I think that for me is the biggest challenge. But it's definitely because of the thing that I like the most, it's very worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I always ask my guests this question, the first and the last question. In your opinion, how can all teachers set up their classroom for success, especially multilingual learner success?
I think if we're thinking about it in a metaphorical sense, right, setting up your classroom for success means that you take a step back. So
Oh my
that
gosh.
means that you are not the giver of knowledge. You are not the end all be all. You are not the one that got something that you have to give. But rather, I like to think about it like you're an MC at a party or something, or at a, like you have someone who's kind of emceeing the event. That is what teaching is. You have an event where children, you have the privilege of being around for a year, are there to learn, but they're also there to give. And so kind of going in and knowing that is a massive, like you're miles ahead if you can go in with that mindset. And then I think literally, making sure that the space is welcoming and the space is not about you. Once again, it's creating a space each year. It's going to be different. It should be different because it should be reflective of your students. And I think really quickly of an example, right? Like there's the teachers who set up their classroom thoroughly. So like the first day of school, every bulletin board is filled, every border is up, every section of the classroom is perfectly organized as it should be, right? There should be some level of planning and thinking, but there's something to, as a child, there's something to being a part of putting up and creating those bulletin boards the first 2 weeks of school, right? Like now I know that my piece of work during math is not just decoration because she already had something up there and she replaced that thing with my first assignment. Whereas I am part of the literal classroom because there was nothing there and I walked in and I gave something of value for her to post, right? So really thinking about it from that perspective, I think is important.
Oh my gosh, I love it on so many levels.
Yeah.
First of all, I was like, taking a step back is like my mantra, right?
Oh, really? I love that.
Like if something is not working, take a step back, right? I just recently did an episode on less is more for English learners. We don't need to cram everything all the time. We
Oh,
need to
that
take a step
resonates.
back, right?
Yes, exactly.
And I think I had a guest, I can't remember who it was, but said a very similar thing. Let
Yeah.
children become part of your classroom and put those work on the wall, like it
Yeah.
will dictate and will be naturally created. So that is very, very powerful.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Odalis, for joining us for this fantastic conversation. I feel like we could talk for hours more.
I know. I feel the same way, actually.
So,
Thank
but
you so
I
much for
really,
having me.
really appreciate your wisdom, your wonderful insights. Where
Thank
can
you.
people connect with you? Because I'm sure after this, everybody's going to want to look you up.
I hope so, right? So I'm really active on LinkedIn. So I welcome any and all connections, and I love to converse on that platform. So please add me, follow me, and just, send me a message.
Awesome, awesome. I will definitely put your information in the show notes. And thank you again so much for joining us for this podcast episode. I hope we can collaborate in the future. And to all, thank you for listening, and until next time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you loved what you heard today, be sure to do two things. First, make sure to subscribe to the ESL Teaching Podcast so you don't miss an episode. And second, leave a positive review wherever you listen, on iTunes, Spotify, or any other platform. positive reviews will improve the chances of this podcast to be discovered in the feed and help our fellow ESL, ELL teachers. And of course, there's a third thing. If you aren't following me on social media yet, come join me on Instagram at SimplyYevaESL, Facebook, SimplyYeva, or connect with me on my website, simplyyeva.com. Thanks again, and until next time.